Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. Why are they the ultimate? Well, one of the reasons is because they're going to help you with ICD-10, the transition to the new codes. You need to know it, and you probably don't know it as well as you should. Check them out at www.webpt.com/podcast to find out more about ICD-10 for a free demo and a lot more. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders Podcast, part of the UpDoc Media family. So last week, our last podcast, we talked with Heidi Janenga, the COO of WebPT, and we kind of introduced ICD-10 and, you know, the change in healthcare and how the U.S. is on the forefront of being the last major healthcare system to implement it, which is great. But, you know, there's a lot in healthcare. Heidi is an awesome entrepreneur. She's built a very, very successful company in WebPT. And I'm not just saying that because there are sponsors, shout out, but because you can look it up. I mean, Google WebPT and you'll see a very successful built company, built on culture, built on a customer experience. They put their customers first. If something goes wrong, they're there. They fix it. They have people always on the phone. You actually talk to a lot of people, and they care about fixing your problem, and they care about how everything is working for you. So if we flip that script and to put into healthcare, I don't think many people can say that. And we say this all the time, and on Twitter and social media, we talk about it quite often. The healthcare experience is atrocious because it doesn't exist. The bar is so low for the expectation whenever you go see any practitioner that just a little bit of positivity makes you a world-class clinician before you even treat the patient. So I've been lucky to make really cool connections on social media, especially Twitter. And one connection that I've been following and reading his blog for a while, and I've been pestering for a while to be on the podcast, finally I broke him down, and he said yes, as long as I don't email him ever again, which is okay, you know, because I got him on the podcast. So our guest on this podcast is Andy DeLau, or better known as The Cancer Geek, or at Cancer Geek, for those of you on Twitter. So Andy, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to the conversation this evening.
So I'm gonna before we get into all your cool stuff and the marketing and the social media stuff, I'm gonna read something to you, and I want you to let me know if this sounds familiar to you. When patients take a step outside of healthcare and are people in their daily lives, technology allows them to connect more, to do less, and makes life simple. Yet, as soon as people step out of their daily lives and walk back into healthcare, they are quickly reminded that they are, again, a patient. That's pretty deep.
that was a pretty deep insight that I wrote recently.
Oh, that was you?
Yeah, that did happen to be me. It definitely sounded familiar.
Okay, good. Just making sure. But I read your blog, and one reason I really like your blog is because your posts aren't like 3,000 words, and they're very succinct, but they are very powerful. And I think that was like two paragraphs or two sentences out of that blog post, and it's so true. And it really epitomizes that it doesn't matter. A person is a person, a customer is a customer, but as soon as you get healthcare involved, as soon as medicine is involved, everything gets so complicated for some reason. And as a healthcare provider, when I was treating patients, that was one thing that I really wanted to work on. I wanted people, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, I wanted great outcomes for them, but that's expected of me. You know, when somebody goes see their healthcare provider, they expect whatever that healthcare provider is supposed to do. They expect to get better. They expect to have less back pain. They expect to get antibiotics if they have an infection, things like that. But that extra step of the customer experience when the person feels like a person, when they felt like people are actually trying to make the experience better, just doesn't happen anymore. And having that experience again, I feel like can completely transform healthcare.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, I think it's really been interesting for me as sort of, you know, why I got into healthcare was, at the end of the day, I wanted to help people. I wanted to, you know, be able to connect and build a relationship and make an impact of some sort in somebody else's lives. And I remember, you know, going through my clinicals and training and, you know, the chairman of the department, you know, kind of came down and said, you know, when things happen and schedules back up, you always have to remember that you can only treat one patient at a time. And I think that's been something that has always stayed with me. And as much as, you know, we try to use technology in new ways and we try to scale different things inside of healthcare, you know, at the end of the day, to me, it's always been about, you know, the person that's sitting in front of you, how do you make a connection and how do you provide what they need based on their expectations? And to me, that is the essence of what healthcare should be all about. The problem is that we just miss the boat, you know, 98% of the time.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll talk a little about innovation, which is a buzzword at this point that gets thrown around a lot. And I think about innovation all the time because it's part of, I think, creativity. I think it's part of being an entrepreneur is you always want to see how it's better. Like to me, innovation is a creative anticipation of future trends, not really optimizing of past successes, which I think a lot of people do. If something works, you try to make it a little bit better. And when you change it a little bit and make it different to an X amount, you call it innovation, which is not true. It's just optimization. But true innovation, I think even in this sense, might break my philosophy. I think true innovation is optimization of the customer experience, is optimization of how it was before when you focus, like you said, on that one-to-one experience. So let's take a step back, though. Tell us about your journey in healthcare and where you were and where you got to now.
Sure. So I'm going to date myself, but I've been in the field of healthcare for probably about 15 years now. The most recent, the last 5 years, I've been a marketing officer for GE Healthcare. So my day-to-day job is managing a billion-dollar part of the business where I focus on molecular imaging in computer tomography from a service perspective globally, which is great because it allows me to, you know, focus a little bit of my time on the markets and things that are going on here in the U.S., but it really allows me to expand my preview. You know, 80-85% of my time and my focus is really spent on global markets. And so it's really interesting to see how healthcare is performed and addressed in different parts of the world, and then how you kind of meld that with, you know, markets such as US and Europe. And then prior to that, the majority of my career was really spent on, you know, the provider side. So working for various healthcare systems and hospitals, I had the privilege of building 5 cancer centers. I've done a renovation. I've done an expansion of cancer centers. I've, you know, completely developed oncology service lines. I've been able to do some research for the National Cancer Institute with one of their pilot programs where it was really focusing on taking all the great research and insights from academia and how do you bring those into the community center, since that's where the majority of cancer care is performed. And so I've just been very privileged to be kind of at the right place at the right time to really take advantage of, unique opportunities and situations, and just sort of being able to put my own fingerprint on something new and different.
So what drew you to cancer in that field in the first place? Was it just opportunity or something else?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things. I think the first thing that specifically drove me to radiation oncology were probably three different motivations. The first was, you know, as I said, it's that connection with people. So I found it to be this, you know, really interesting subset of oncology where you got to meet patients on a daily basis. In addition to that, I'm a huge techie. And so you get to work with these, you know, million-dollar pieces of equipment, and how do you use that technology to sort of administer, you know, cancer treatments to patients. And then the third aspect was each day was a new challenge. And so those kind of hit all three of the different, you know, sort of core values and emotions that sort of drive me as a person. And so it was kind of the perfect storm that happened. And then in addition to that, you know, as many people, my life had been touched by cancer. I had, you know, a friend growing up that was diagnosed with cancer. I had another friend whose little brother was diagnosed with cancer. I lost my paternal grandmother to cancer. I lost aunts and other family members to cancer. So it just happened to, you know, again, kind of be that perfect storm. It's kind of like cancer has enveloped my life. And so it's kind of been my life's work or my calling to try and make my impact in the lives of people that are impacted by cancer.
I think it's very, very powerful stuff to kind of embrace something that you really don't have control over. You know, when you're dealing with cancer and oncology, you want to help. And like you said, I've had experiences in my life with cancer. My grandfather passed away from pancreatic cancer, and it's one of those things that you hear stories and you do the walks and you do it, but you know, once you experience it and you see it in person, when it's life happening, and you really, when you put life to words, that's when it really, I think, affects you and affects people. And it's a catch-22. You know, you want people to have that kind of passion and drive to work for a cause, but you know you really don't want people to have that kind of suffering and emotional turmoil of dealing with death and being affected by cancer. So it's tough, but I completely understand when you really feel like you want to make a change. So then you get into it, and how's it been for you? I mean, what have you done, and what do you still look forward to doing?
Yeah, you know, it's been wonderful. It's, you know, kind of given me a lot of different opportunities, you know, see different parts of, you know, the U.S. and the world. It's given me this ability to impact lives in new and different ways. You know, I would say for me personally, it's really been important to have this deep understanding of the patient journey and being able to empathize with patients and their family members along that journey and the different transitions that they go through. And in understanding those, you really start to understand how, you know, whether it's a service line or a, you know, a nurse or a physician or information or all those various pieces that go into caring for a patient and their family, you sort of begin to understand how all of those pieces fit together to make the right picture and the right story for patients. And for me personally, I think that has been, you know, the greatest learning experience I've had in, you know, my entire professional career. And I get to continue to have those experiences. Currently I'm working on a project where we're going to be bringing cancer centers to China. And, how do you mix, Eastern and Western medicine to provide an experience that meets the expectations of those patients in that region? And so, although we all as humans are similar in some regards, there are cultural and regional, differences that really sort of need to be understood in order to be able to create the right experience for patients. And that's the part that I love about the work that I do.
So I'm guessing it's always a challenge to come into a system when you see maybe some really skilled clinicians or some state-of-the-art equipment, but then you kind of observe that interaction between two people, right? Strip away titles, strip away experience. It's people talking with other people. One just it's a different scale. One person is listening, hoping to hear something that will help them, and the other person is either sharing information on a very even keel personal connection, or they're sharing information that is something they just need to share. And of course, we're talking about a clinician and patient interaction, and that sometimes that's what it becomes. It's essentially a textbook reciprocating stuff that they saw in a test result or spitting out information that they got from a diagnosis versus explaining it like you would to a family member, whether it's bad or good. How hard is that for you to see when things aren't going well before you turn things around? How, on a personal level, I mean, to me, that's one of the hardest things is to see really poor interaction. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely heartbreaking to see, just that commonality of two people interacting with one another break down and get turned into, sort of this production line of, hey, I've got 15 minutes to meet with the person, and I need to be able to, go through my checkboxes, and I need to be able to regurgitate the clinical, story that I've put together, and I need to be able to, spit it out in a timely fashion because I've got, 15, 20, 30 other patients that I need to make sure that I see. And I think that's where, things for me begin to get, very emotional. Is, sort of transitioning from this opportunity to really connect and make an impact on a personal basis with someone, especially at a time in their life that is so altering, to one where, hey, I'm worried about, my production and my efficiency because this is how I'm being judged and this is how I'm being measured. And I don't have time to make a connection with another person. And so it is. It's very difficult to witness. But I think what I've learned along the way is the more you observe and the more you can take those observations and start to really empathize with both sides, between the patient and the physician, the more you can identify opportunities to improve and to make the right changes.
And it, but it's not always, it's not necessarily right. It's not necessarily the length of the conversation. It's the quality of the conversation. A physician or any other clinician can have a quality 5-minute conversation with somebody and follow up at another time, saying, listen, if you have any questions, if there's something else, I know 5 minutes is not enough, but I'll be happy to come around and or do this or that. That there's other ways, there's strategies to do it. And like you said, it's not necessarily, this is not a blame game. We're not talking about blaming physicians or any other clinicians. You get sucked in to a habit, you get sucked into a culture, into an environment, a system that you have to do this because it's livelihood for them as well. People are people. You're doing a job, you have bills to pay, you have families to take care of, personal goals, ambitions, everything like that. All that has to be taken into account. But there has to be a way. The system itself has to be designed in a way that everything gets taken into account. And right now it's not. I mean, right now the system is designed, I think, to make the most money.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've kind of, you know, gotten on my own soapbox in the last year or so, is that, you know, I think if I, you know, kind of look at, you know, what's gone on outside of healthcare, you know, we've had this industrial revolution and it's really become, you know, about manufacturing and production and efficiencies. And we've started to adopt some of those techniques and some of those thoughts and processes into healthcare. And on one hand, it's very good from a quality, safety perspective. But on the flip side, we've kind of gone almost in the wrong direction. You know, there used to be a time where, you know, medicine was truly, it was an art. It's, you know, where a physician was trained in the art of medicine, in the art of healing, and understanding, you know, problems and symptoms and all of that information for patients and, you know, figuring out what was the best option for a treatment or a remedy or follow-up for that patient. And because of some of these production principles, you know, it's kind of forced all of us to get away from that. And, you know, my sort of goal is to try and, you know, highlight the fact that, you know, we are missing the art in healthcare and we need to bring more of that back. And, you know, I'm going to try and do whatever I can in my situations to bring more of that back to healthcare.
Web PT is the ultimate EMR for physical therapy. You know that. One of the reasons is because they know ICD-10, and I don't. So I ask Heidi Janenga, COO of Web PT. Heidi, what the heck is ICD-10?
Well, ICD-10 is diagnosis codes on steroids. We're talking more than 68,000 codes. All HIPAA-covered entities must switch to ICD-10 on October 1st, 2015, or face claim denials. That's where Web PT can help. Our intuitive ICD-10 code selector is built right into our documentation platform, thus simplifying the patient diagnosis process. I encourage all of you to check it out. Visit webpt.com/podcast to request a free online demonstration.
And that's, you know, there's not enough people that share that same point of view. And I wish there were more. And one of the coolest things when I was treating patients, when I was seeing patients as a physical therapist, you know, I was spending 40 minutes to an hour with every patient. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I joined that profession, that I became a physical therapist, is because of the connections and because of the relationships. And because you can't really fake it, you know, you can't fake it for 40 minutes to an hour. A couple times a week or three times a week, or even once a week, you know, spend an hour with your closest friend three times in a week. You know, you see some of your best friends maybe once every several weeks, and you know, you catch up on everything and you're good to go. What if you saw that person for 8 weeks or 9 weeks for 2 to 3 times a week? I mean, that's tough to maintain a conversation with the closest of your friends. So really developing that skill of caring about what people say and really caring about what's going on with them. And, you know, the word of the day is empathizing. You know, we talk about, say it all the time, you see it popping up everywhere, but to really empathize is you really have to care about what they're saying on a genuine level. And, you know, some of my favorite things with patients was not really them telling me how they felt, because we were going to get to that. I never, ever started any kind of treatment with me asking them about their pain or anything like that. I just ask them, hey, how's it going? What's the latest and greatest? You know, and some of the favorite things I would hear is, man, I couldn't wait to come in and tell you about this movie that I saw, or I couldn't, you know, I saw this car. We were talking about cars last time, you know, just little things, like little human things that by far are better than anything else in that profession, especially when you're doing it for many years.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, I think for me specifically in oncology, it was the same thing. You know, for radiation oncology, you see the same patient 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, for 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, it's a similar situation of frequency with, you know, medical oncology. And so you deeply become, you know, invested in the patients and their families and their birthdays and their anniversaries and their children going to school. And, you know, that's what it's always been about. And, you know, I feel very blessed to have made a lot of, you know, connections and relationships with the patients that I've had the privilege of meeting and being able to help them along with their journey.
That's really cool stuff is those connections. And tell me if you saw this as well, but you know, one of the things with seeing patients for a couple times a week and for an hour or so is I also got to hear about their experiences with other healthcare providers. And communication is critical of any relationship, as we've said. People don't know what they don't know, and people will make assumptions and correlations based on past experiences and common sense unless you tell them otherwise. So I would get my patients complaining to me about their PCP or their surgeon or their ortho or things like that. And I'd say, well, not to put words in their mouth, but the reason they did this or this or this is because of that. And the patient would go, oh, and their entire demeanor for that other healthcare professional changes. And it was, you know, they might have done everything absolutely correctly, but because they didn't explain it properly or because they didn't communicate well enough, the person is making up the story themselves. The narrative becomes their own versus explained to them. And did that happen with in oncology, when just lack of communication? I'm sure there's a lot of fear and a lot of concern in that environment as well.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. One of the things that, you know, I've sort of taken away from my experiences is that for the most part, there's some common things that patients are looking for in that interaction. You know, the first thing kind of comes down to time. You know, when you're sitting face to face with a patient, whether you're a nurse or a physician or a physical therapist or a technologist, patients want your time. And to your point earlier, it doesn't necessarily mean that they need 60 minutes of your time. They just want your undivided attention during that time that they have with you. And that kind of gets into, you know, there needs to be a trust. There needs to be this trust between the patient and a physician or whomever within the healthcare team to be able to communicate and ask questions back and forth, that, you know, there's not going to be any repercussions, or that, you know, they can trust in the fact that you're going to be able to explain that to them in a way that is simple, concise, that they can understand it. And, you know, the third thing is really around transparency. So, you know, we hear a lot about informed consent and treatment options and those types of things. And so, you know, really what patients and their family members looking for is complete transparency. You know, sometimes physicians, they don't necessarily have all the information at their disposal. And, you know, especially in today's world, you know, people are in tune with that. And it's okay to say, I don't know, but we're going to find the answer out. And so that level of transparency, I think, is really important. And I think the most important thing, which is probably point number four, is about transitions. You know, if you think of any time in your own daily life, the opportunity to have the most anxiety is when you transition, you know, from one point to another point, whether it's, you know, you're changing jobs, or maybe you're, you know, getting a new vehicle or a new home, or you're moving or you're traveling. Whatever you do, there's a transition. And when you transition from point A to point B, there's opportunity for anxiety to be built. And so that's even, you know, hypersensitive when you're sick, you don't feel well, and there's something wrong with you. And so it's really sort of being able to manage and help guide patients through those transitions. And so, you know, that's sort of been the things that I try to focus on, and I try to educate, you know, everyone inside of healthcare, is that if you can sort of focus on these four T's around time, trust, transparency, and transitions, that's the win for patients. If you can do that, then you'll be completely surprised by how well patients and the relationship and the experience and everything else sort of follows afterwards.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, those four will, if implemented, will negate so many healthcare issues and day-to-day problems. It'll be significant in improving the customer experience, and I think the overall outcomes. You know, if you don't trust your clinician, you're going to find another clinician, or you're never going to really invest, I think, in the treatment. And it has to be an investment on both sides, which is a hard thing to understand, but we don't get people better if they are not ready to get better. It has to be a committed relationship, and relationship means both parties are involved. Yes, I know there's variations in oncology versus physical therapy, but in a lot of respects, I think healthcare is healthcare, and that investment, that trust, like you said, needs to happen to really have the best outcomes, and in the long run, save money for the system, which I think a lot of times gets forgotten. They want to make money, but saving money is just as good as making money. So let's talk about a little bit more on the business side, because you do marketing, right? You work in the marketing field of healthcare as well. What do you foresee as the necessary steps for healthcare providers or even healthcare business owners to implement in terms of marketing to have better reach with patients and better engagement with patients or even potential patients?
You know, that's a great question. And my theory may be slightly different from the norm. But for me personally, I think there's a transition that's going on inside of healthcare, and I've probably have felt this way, you know, for the majority of my career, but I think now it's something that's real and tangible that other people are starting to see. And it's this transition of patients going from a time where physician knows best to physicians and patients are starting to be on a even playing field, in which physicians are so busy that they may not necessarily always have enough time to stay up to date on the latest research or clinical trials or those types of things. And so patients are savvy. They're doing the research. They're doing the searching before they go for an appointment. And so with that being said, it's kind of like, okay, if you're going to do marketing or advertising, those types of things, you have to be more authentic today than you were so 10, 20 years ago, because it's not about the technology. It's not necessarily about the certifications and the accreditations, because that's just the ticket to the game. Everyone needs to do that to be able to compete. So at the end of the day, it's about how do you connect with those patients in your service area. And I think the people that are going to win in the future are the ones that make it the easiest and the most simple for patients to connect. And that connection doesn't necessarily always have to be face-to-face. It can be through portals. It can be through SMS and text. It can be telehealth. It can be, you know, routine, you know, emails or checks. There can be a lot of different ways in which healthcare can connect with their end users. But I think the people that are going to win are the ones that figure out how to make those connections more frequently and more simply.
Do you think that the connections that are made regularly are almost unexpected, to the point where it gives that clinician an advantage? Because, again, like we said, that the customer experience is so low in healthcare that a physician that follows up 2 weeks later personally with a 2-minute phone call, or even has, you know, their assistant send a quick email saying, "Hey, Dr. blah 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 was wondering how you're doing." I mean, those little simple things, again, it's rudimentary technology, talking about email and things like that. Is that a big enough of a change to make a difference?
You know, I think it's a small change. And I think it depends on, you know, regional differences. And I think it depends on, you know, cultural differences. I think it depends on those patient populations. So sometimes the low tech is sometimes the best way to make those changes. And, you know, there's other instances in which, you know, having the highest level of technology can lead to, you know, a better experience. But I think that's where, you know, we as leaders inside of healthcare have to sort of hit the pause button and understand what it is that patients in that service area are looking for. You know, what are the disparities? What are the issues? What are the challenges? What are the problems? And the deeper you can define and understand those, then the better you can sort of, you know, co-create the best design to meet those challenges. And, you know, I think we're starting to see some good partnerships, and we're starting to see some of that co-design happen. But now it's, you know, how do we do more of it? How do we accelerate it? How do we get, you know, everyone that's a healthcare insider to sort of buy into that? And I think that's kind of the challenge that we face today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a challenge that we'll be working on for a bit in the near future. But, you know, the beauty of technology, the beauty of the millennial generation is not necessarily the expectation, but it's almost the need for constant connection and engagement and availability. So you either win by adjusting to not what is or what was, but what will be. And what will be is the next generation, and what will be is the next evolution of connectivity, like you said, not always face-to-face. And I think the ones that really understand that and the ones that adapt to that will make healthcare a better experience for everyone, because not everyone needs it in the same way.
Exactly.
So with that, Andy, I mean, thanks a lot for joining me. I mean, that was, I think, regardless of the field that our listeners are in, I think that's so much valuable information. For more, the blog, we mentioned the blog, where can our listeners find you, and Twitter and everything else?
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter under the surname at CancerGeek. My blog is cancergeek.wordpress.com. And I welcome questions, emails, thoughts. You know, as you said, I think a lot of the topics and things that we talk about, you know, aren't specific to, you know, cancer or anything. I think they're broad themes inside of healthcare. And so, you know, just kind of like what we talked about today, to me, it's all about making connections and finding out how we can work together collaboratively to change the experience and make it better for patients.
Absolutely. It's, you know, getting like-minded individuals to work together for a common vision, and is when change happens. And we're everywhere. You know, people have like minds and goals. And once you get together in the same room with one of these people or a group of these people, you really know it. And it's just awesome conversations that feel like they're 10 minutes long, but it's been, you look at watching like 4 hours disappeared. Does that ever happen to you? Like you're talking to somebody, you're like, oh man, that was a great 20-minute chat. And it's like 3 hours later, like, holy crap. And no alcohol, by the way, was involved.
I was going to say our conversation this evening, I think, is like that. You know, but yeah, I get into conversations like this all the time, whether it's, you know, with patients sometimes or physicians or at conferences. And, you know, I think it's great being able to connect and learn from other people. And I know even in our conversation, you know, I've learned probably more from you than you probably have from me. And so, you know, I think that's great.
Not at all, but you are a gracious guest. Just like our previous guest, she was saying a lot of nice things about me, and I almost started to believe it.
Well, you definitely should believe it.
Well, I appreciate that. But in all seriousness, if you haven't checked out Andy's blog, check out cancergeek.wordpress.com. It really is a really good blog, and I wouldn't say that unless I meant it. It's kind of like telling patients this isn't going to hurt right before you do something that hurts. You just don't do it. You don't do it. So same thing with this. It's a really, really good blog, especially for the healthcare crowd. So Andy, again, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, for all our listeners, please check out updocmedia.com. We have other podcasts launched now, so most of them are out and about, as well as on iTunes, and the blogs. You know, we've been blogging some pretty good stuff. Again, I'm biased, but I still think it's pretty good stuff. My last blog I did was 5 TED Talks that are must watch for entrepreneurs, because they're 5 of my favorite, and I think they're really good, and some of my favorite things come out of those TED Talks. Just, you know, if nothing else, they're great for motivation and get you thinking a little bit differently, because you never know where those thoughts can go. Reviews are always, always appreciated. So check us out, Therapy Insiders, on iTunes. Thanks to you, we've been constantly within the top 50 podcasts in the science and medicine category. So really, we really appreciate that. And as always, the best things about these podcasts are the conversations on Twitter, on our Facebook page, and just the engagement that we get from all of you. So let us know. I'm sure you'll have a lot of cool stuff to say about this episode with Andy, and check him out at Cancer Geek and me at Therapy Insiders. So until next time, thanks a lot. We'll catch you on the next Therapy Insiders podcast.